Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Earl Johnston from Hypatia Industries.
I'm Jonathan Melville from MDD in Atlanta.
I'm Patrick Harrington from Mildly Geeky in Boston.
And I think Rog is dead. So we have on as...
he had a good run.
We have on as special guests, Jalen Davenport. Hi, Jalen.
Hi, all done.
And also Nathan Querido.
How you doing?
Say it again for me.
Querido.
Querido. Nathan Querido. And here we're going to be talking in a kind of different format than we usually do. We're going to have an episode called Shootout at the Local Dev Corral. So we're going to be talking about local development and what we use and why mine is better than yours. Okay. so let's talk about it, you know, just generally for a little bit first. So what is a local dev environment? And I'll give you my kind of take on it and what do we use it for? And if anyone wants to get their two cents in, you know, by all means. But a local dev environment is kind of where the sausage is made. You know, it's the environment that we use to build something. And we have all of our dev mode enabled and developer tools running and all that kind of good stuff. And we want something that we can use to develop and debug a project that then is going to end up live somewhere else. Does that sound kind of reasonable?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to do it. You still see some people that, you know, will FTP into a server and do it live. I've seen and heard of clients that will ask you to actually VPN to their servers and do development on there. But, you know, if you're doing things the right way, yeah, this is your local setup and, you know, all of your things that help you realize what's going wrong or what's going right and do things the right way.
Yeah, and you raise a good point. So the reason why we have one to begin with is people don't need to see how the sausage is made, right? They just need to see the nice end result of it. And I think doing it live the way you're talking about it, I mean, it scares the crap out of me, to be honest with you. It's like working on an engine while you're driving the car down the road. I mean, it just seems like a terrible idea. But, you know, there may be cases where you might actually need to do that.
You never used Mounty back in the day?
I never did. Why don't you tell us the glories of Mounty?
Mounty was the ability to use
change your expression engine templates. Like it was back in expression engine back in the day, you had to change your templates by editing them in the control panel. Oh, so God. Mounty allows you to sort of mount the remote file system on your local machine, and then you could work on it that way. But you were essentially still cowboy coding a lob site.
Yeah, every time you hit save, you were writing to the database in MySQL, or it was doing some really interesting things.
Dear God.
Yeah. It was like a huge hack.
It felt really cool until you realized how scary it was.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's no different than just SSHing into the live server and just editing stuff, or
that's exactly what it was,
or just using MySQL and like editing the live database. Yes. You know,
and I've never done that before.
I will admit I have done it before, and there are cases where you need to do this stuff, but really we want a local dev environment so that we can make mistakes and that the client and then also the end users don't see those mistakes, right? So we want kind of like a safe little sandbox that we can play around with until we can produce something that we think is ready for other people to kind of look at. And, you know, I want to say everyone here has a different local dev environment that they want to use. And we may make fun of you for your choice, but just deal with it. It's not a big deal. You are not your tool, you know, so don't take anything personally. So let's talk about it. Like, let's see who uses what. Let's just kind of run down the list. So I myself currently use Homestead, and we'll get into the details of what all this stuff is later. Earl, what do you use?
Well, so I'm the lazy bum here out of everyone. I'm really excited to talk about all this stuff because a lot of my projects, I'm not working on the actual live site. but usually host things on like a subdomain. So I do have a separation, like a separation between live and development. But I'm usually working on a server somewhere.
So you're cowboy coding the staging server, basically.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, because again, I'm a one man shop, and I'm just, yeah. I mean, I know that this there's more writer ways to do this.
More writer ways.
Yeah.
Oh dear God.
But
we know what you mean.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there. I haven't gotten there yet. Because again, just a one man shop. Like my motivation is really low. But I know that I need to do it. So I'm interested to hear about everybody else's setups.
All right. So do you ever do anything locally? Like you've got I know you run Linux at home. Do you ever do anything just locally on that machine, or are you always connected to a staging server somewhere somehow?
Yeah, so sometimes I pull, like usually that's if I'm really gonna like trying to think of some, I'm working on this really ancient like pre BigCommerce site right now that they're trying to transition to BigCommerce, so I pulled down their database locally to start like hacking around with stuff to try and work up the import scripts.
So in that case, your local dev environment is...
It's just my Ubuntu box.
Yeah, you don't really have one.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And we're going to talk about that too, like a custom setup. So, Jalen, what do you use?
Pretty big fan of Laravel Valet over here. It's easy to set up, at least in terms of the non-GUI options out there, in my opinion. I've played around with a bunch of them, but it's just simple and runs locally on your Mac, and I really enjoy it.
Jonathan? Jonathan?
Yeah, I might better unmute my mic if I want to answer you. So I am a huge fan of Homestead. So I use Homestead for everything. I came from using MAMP back in the day, but I appreciate the flexibility. You get a little bit more flexibility with a true virtual machine running. So Homestead's pretty much it for me.
And since Rog is either dead or I don't know, he might be reanimated now as a zombie. You might have to talk some MAMP stuff. Rog, are you actually here now?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know if my Wi-Fi has issues, but I'm here.
Okay. So what do you primarily use for local dev, Michael?
I primarily use MAMP, and I really like it. And I've bounced around stuff like Homestead and Valet and home spinning my own server runners. But I just really like MAMP.
All right. I'm going to take you to task on that. Nathan, how about yourself?
So I've been using Nanobox for the last half a year, 8 months, and I'm kind of in love with it, actually.
So Nanobox is something that used to be based on Vagrant, the way that Homestead is, but now is based on Docker. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
You still have, when you install the Nanobox installer, it still uses, at the moment, VirtualBox. But everything's done for you with a script, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And Patrick, how about yourself?
Day-to-day, I use Valet, like Jalen. Mm-hmm. I've used many of these tools at some point, though. So, and I'm a little bit of a self-loathing Valet user. So I'm hoping to leave, like, invigorated and ready to finally do Homestead or something. Yeah.
Well, and that's the interesting thing to keep in mind is that, you know, everyone here is reasonably intelligent and has picked different choices and has different reasons for ending up where they are. But one of the things that I want to talk about first, though, is what Earl was talking about in terms of how he is doing it on the server. And Earl, don't get mad at me.
No, go ahead. I'm ready. I came in ready.
So I think it's actually fine if you're just using kind of a staging server as your development environment. The issue is, though, that there are certain config things that you could be doing that will then affect the live production server, potentially, right? Like if you slip a finger and you end up that you're using the production database instead of the staging database, like really bad things can happen, mm-hmm. right? And then the other thing, and this may not be an issue for you, but for me, I sometimes work on a laptop somewhere and I like to have a self-contained environment that I don't have to be connected to anything. You know, if I've got a few hours on the airplane and dear God, like don't try doing any remote dev work on airplane Wi-Fi. Okay. Like this is not going to work, but it's nice to have an environment self-contained on my laptop that I can work anywhere. Right. And the other thing that you mentioned that you do is you kind of have a custom setup. So you're running Linux and you just kind of run everything off of there. And we had a very similar situation with Lindsay DiLoretto, who was on our last podcast, where as of a couple of months ago, he was just kind of using a homebrew, not homebrew, the installer package,
right, yeah,
but just his own setup. And the real problem there was that nobody could help him with it, because nobody knows exactly what custom setup he was running into. So when he was asking for help on a particular issue, no one could really help him. Whereas if he was using a predefined package, you know, whether it was MAMP or Valet or Homestead or Nanobox or whatever, there are people that have experience with that layer of tooling that would be able to help him out. But on his site or his setup, it was all custom. Right. So when he had a problem, we're like, I don't know. Like, it depends on what's installed. I don't know what's here. I don't know what's there. And it just becomes really, really
on everything.
It does. And that's one of the things that no matter what tool you're using, it's really a good idea to be using some kind of a tool, like some kind of a layer, because then you're getting a deterministic setup, and there's going to be people out there that have experience with it that can help you out when you need to do a particular thing, or something is broken, or something isn't working, or whatever. So my advice to you, Earl, and then you, the royal you, if you're listening and you don't have some kind of a tool that you're using for your local set dev setup, is that you get one. Because I think that it is, and no matter what choice you decide to make, it's something that it will take care of a layer of things for you that you won't have to worry about. When you move to a new machine, it's not going to be a big deal to get everything set up again. And if you have problems, there are people that you can talk to that will understand that tool and be able to help you work it out, right? So, I mean, my kind of...
Specifically, I think it like a tool that has a pretty large community of people interested in it, that mm-hmm. has good documentation, and that has some way of easily getting data in and out so you can move it around between computers. Like pick a tool that will make, you know, that has some momentum behind it.
Right.
Not just like not just any tool, but like a specific bubble of tools that serves this purpose.
So, yeah, and I think you just want to, you know, you want to specialize in the place where you're going to add the most value, and that's going to be
right
in your core skill set of writing web code, of, you know, doing user experience work, whatever it is, setting up your local environment. Like, someone's figured that out and they've spent all their time on it. Let them get it right.
Yes.
Yeah. So my only question that comes to mind with stuff like this is, you know, things change so quickly. I mean, already you talked about like Nanobox is a variant of, it was based on Vagrant and now it's based on Docker, and things are changing all the time. So this isn't really a defense. I know what I'm doing isn't the right way. But, you know, if I'm running things on the server, like in a staging environment, the way that I'm doing, I know my production and staging environment are exactly the same, and there's I don't know if middleware is exactly like the term, it's probably not, but there's no, you know, there, if Vagrant falls out of favor and it stops being maintained or something, and then, you know what I mean? Like, there's a whole, I could invest a lot of time in getting these things set up and then have them disappear in like a year or two and have to start all over. Whereas what I'm doing now, which again, I recognize is not perfect or even great, there's no concern for that.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to that is if you want to do it the way that you're doing it, what I would definitely do is I would have a separate VPS for your staging server, mm-hmm. right? Like, just wall it off, right? Because it hasn't happened yet, right. But if it happens, it's going to be a unmitigated disaster.
Going to have a bad time, right?
Yeah. You're going to have a really, really, really bad time when you stomp on the wrong thing.
Yeah, you're right. Of course, yeah, you're right.
But that's a good point, though, is that, like, the point of a big value that these tools provide is that your dev environment is guaranteed to be the same as your production environment, but that value is not necessarily specific to a particular tool, right? Like Homestead, for example, the big value of Homestead for me is that it provides a pretty identical experience to what I get deploying a site via Forge. The value of MAMP for me is that it mirrors on my local box the Nginx setup that I have on my production box. If Vagrant goes away, that's actually fine because the value that it that Homestead provided me was I built this project and I made the decision that, you know, I'm going to pick a tool and an environment. And so for this project, I developed it in a context where my local was the same as my production. If Vagrant goes away, that value doesn't necessarily go away, right? And the fact that Nginx changes, you know, doesn't mean that MAMP is necessarily like fragile. It just means that the version of Nginx that MAMP needs to run is going to get incremented. But like, I guess what I'm saying is there's some abstraction between, you know, the brand name of the tool and the actual value that it provides.
Yeah, Michael, I don't mean to interrupt you here, but you it sounds like you're shucking oysters or something in the background.
I'm gesticulating very enthusiastically.
All right, well, calm.
I'll try to be a bit calmer.
Yeah, cool your jets, man, because it really did sound like you're shucking oysters back there. And yeah, I'm interested in what you have to say, yeah. But all I could think about was the oysters.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah, duly noted. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so. I want to talk. Rog, let's let you go next. Okay, you got to chill out. You know, strap your arms down or something.
If we're gonna talk about MAMP, I'm gonna get real excited.
We are gonna talk about MAMP, and so I'm gonna give you a setup regarding MAMP.
Okay.
The things that I don't like about MAMP. All right. So first of all, in the craft Slack. There have been no end of issues with people trying to get MAMP set up and working. And a lot of times the answer has been, look, why don't you just try getting it set up with Valet? It'll probably be easier, right? And the real issue, though, that I have with MAMP is it tries to be this nice, friendly, GUI tool, but you end up having to use the MySQL and MySQLD and MySQL dump and some other stuff. You end up using the binaries that are actually installed in that app itself. And MAMP to me kind of feels a little bit like some of these older tools like, you know, I don't know, Dreamweaver or Coda or whatever that try to wrap a nice GUI layer around something, but that something that they're trying to wrap has become so varied and has been changing so quickly that I just can't see how it's viable. So tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, a big piece of value that MAMP provides for me is it lets me run different instances of things like PHP in different versions for different projects. So the fact that MAMP has its own PHPs, plural, its own PHPs internal to it, enables that really easy switching, right? If I'm testing a plugin or I'm, you know, troubleshooting somebody's plugin issue, I can switch to their version of PHP for my support environment.
If
and
it's there.
Troubleshoot something. So like,
if it's
I mean,
there and yeah, the PHP.ini stuff you need to manage with MAMP has all this magic where it, you know, tries to pair the GUI to the old school PHP.ini. That's where I've always run into a lot of issues.
Yeah, and I get what it's trying to do. Like, I love what it's trying to do. I love that it's trying to solve this problem in a user-friendly way. But it ends up being kind of user-hostile when things are not up to date or things are not... And it kind of reminds me of Patrick's favorite CodeKit, which is supposed to be this kind of GUI tool for... Hi, Patrick.
You know you still use Coda. Look at your dock right now. Sure. Earl, okay. Is Coda, is that little green leaf still on the dock?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Of course it is.
Yeah. Also, are we not using Dreamweaver anymore? I just want to go back to that. That's
but my point is...
Okay, Andrew,
hold on. Let me just set it up, and I'll let you talk for as long as you want. My issue with all of these... My issue with all of these GUI tools is that they're trying to wrap a really nice GUI layer around something, and I love that in concept, but the thing they're trying to wrap, in CodeKit's case, they're basically trying to wrap it around, you know, a build system like a Gulp or a Webpack or whatever, and in MAMP's case, it's trying to wrap it around a server environment, and in all of these cases, the underlying thing has become so varied in terms of what people might use and changes so rapidly that there just seem to be so many problems trying to get these things to work. Go ahead.
Sure. I think that's not exactly a completely fair accusation, and I'll tell you why. CodeKit is actually a really good parallel example, right? CodeKit mm-hmm. doesn't wrap Gulp or Grunt. CodeKit is like a sibling in the solution space of Gulp or Grunt. Mm-hmm. CodeKit wants to wrap things like SAS and JS Min and JS Lint and like the individual tools. It wants to put a nice interface around them so that you can, you know, have a nice build process that you click a button and everything runs according to your configuration. Well, that's exactly what Gulp and Grunt are doing, right? You don't sit there and, you know, individually run your SAS and run your LESS and run your JS Lint and run your whatever, right? Gulp provides you an interface, and it's not, you know, an OS X GUI interface, but it is an umbrella that sort of gathers these system level tools and gives them, you know, makes it easier to interact with them. And I feel like MAMP is doing much the same thing, right? The fact that it's a GUI is a bit of a red herring, right? If it was a command line thing that I ran that turns some servers on and off directly on a machine, fine. But I think that the fact that it's wrapping up lower level stuff isn't necessarily scary. I mean, PHP doesn't increment that quickly. And when it does, I have found, especially in MAMP 4, like that they're pretty quick about releasing an update that includes the newest version of PHP. And your php.ini config doesn't actually change that rapidly. I mean, I manage probably 100 projects, and I have never run into a situation in development where, you know, I need to be doing something bleeding edge, so bleeding edge that I can't wait 2 weeks for MAMP to push an update. Where people do get into, I think, confusion and frustration around the abstraction bubble that MAMP provides is when specifically the problem that I have run into a lot of times and that I've seen people in the Slack talking about a lot of times is when you are trying to interact with PHP on the command line and your shell doesn't know whether it's talking to your system PHP or to MAMP's internal PHP.
Or the system's MySQL versus MAMP's MySQL.
Right. So yeah. So I think this is a pretty niche problem. It has, like, I've only run into it a few times when I'm trying to do like my own custom commands in Craft, and then I run some custom commands using Craft's command runner, and the environment isn't there because the PHP that I'm running is on my system, and the PHP that has access to my .env environment is the one inside of MAMP, and so it's just an issue of you go, you set your paths, and you run that same command using MAMP's PHP. MAMP has some features where it will like reroute your system daemons to the internal MAMP daemons, and I choose not to do that because it's a bit of magic under the hood that I can't see, and because I can't see it, don't trust it, right? So I would rather set my own custom path. MAMP will help you with that if you want, but that's such a niche problem, and it does have a solution that, like, compared to my gripes about other environments that I've tried, it's just really minor, and the value that MAMP does provide, which is really easily being able to switch back and forth between Apache and Nginx, being able to switch between PHP versions, that value is what I need, and the gripe is so very small and solvable by comparison.
All right, so let me just a couple of things that you mentioned there. So I agree with you that the fact that it's a GUI is kind of a red herring, and it doesn't really matter. Like, it could be a CLI tool that tries to wrap all this stuff up, but it is relevant that it's a GUI tool. in that a GUI tool tends to make it more accessible to people. And I think that's why a lot of people end up using things like CodeKit or MAMP, because honestly, a lot of times a GUI tool is less intimidating and is easier to use. I think CodeKit, for example, as you mentioned, it tries to abstract away some of these build steps, which is great, until you want to use Tailwind CSS. And then how do you build that into your CodeKit workflow? Or right. until you want to do critical CSS, and how do you build that in? And I think there is just no way that CodeKit specifically is going to be able to keep up with the rapid changing development environment. Now, right. with MAMP, you're right. I mean, the server environment is a little bit less crazy in terms of how often and how quickly it changes. I'm just looking at how many support questions that I see in the Craft Slack having to do with MAMP, and it's, you know, maybe people just aren't as familiar with it as you are, but I've just seen all sorts of issues all over the place where, you know, the database backup isn't working because it doesn't point to the right MySQLD, and it seems like MAMP is trying to kind of, it is trying to do some magic behind the curtains to make all this stuff happen, and that can be really nice until it doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work, it's a complete nightmare to try and diagnose and figure it out and get it working.
Right. I don't think we see so many kinds of issues. I think we see pretty much one kind of issue
just a lot.
Over and over
yeah.
and over
okay,
again.
That's fair. That's
which
fair.
Which is if you are trying to talk to that internal environment from outside of that internal environment, then you have to understand that you are doing that. You're like piercing right. the bubble, and you have to understand, you know, from a command line standpoint, you know, how to set the path so that you're talking to the correct PHP. But this is, you know, as simple as looking it up on Stack Exchange or, you know, screaming about it.
So you know, Michael, you're kind of fading out. So let me.
You're correct. You're correct, Andrew. There are some things. If you're doing an esoteric thing, like when I was originally developing Printmaker and I needed GhostScript on my server. Well, MAMP didn't have GhostScript, and installing GhostScript into MAMP's environment was a little bit tricky. So I moved to Homestead for a while, and then MAMP got GhostScript, and it was fine. But right. like. For the 90% case of people just developing PHP websites on Apache or Nginx who don't need to be doing super esoteric stuff, I really think the value outweighs the gripes. And again, like every system, like Homestead has mapping and routing issues when I'm trying to talk to Homestead. You know, I have to figure out if I'm shelled into the right VM or whatever. Like there's these sorts of things that you just have to know how yeah. something, you know, can how I, your environment works, and you just know how to work with it, and that's part
I think,
of it.
I think Nathan wants to jump in here, so go ahead, Nathan.
I want to play devil's advocate a bit here.
Do it. We love devils.
for me, I guess you could say I'm a designer who develops on the, you know, and I'm better designer than developer, but I'm a one-man shop as well. And I want something that I don't need to think about. I might develop a site. I do Django projects sometimes. I do mostly Craft stuff now, other PHP framework things, or some static site using Silex or Lumen. And I want something I don't need to think about. I don't want to think about half a year down the line, how did I configure that again? What's that command? And then I've got to go find it, and I've got to go ask.
Yes.
Right.
I got to go badger Andrew or exactly. some other person. I hate that. And yeah. I want to have all the stuff. I don't want to be. I'm not DevOps. I'm a designer / developer. Maybe I'm a niche kind of guy doing different kind of projects for people, but I often have to touch WordPress sites for clients. They just say, I've got a problem. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Sorry, I agree. Whatever pays the bills, man.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I agree.
We all have... Well,
it's not just that we don't want to mess with the config and have to like track that in our brains. Sometimes it actually just doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, for so many projects, the stock Nginx PHP or Apache PHP or whatever, the stock out-of-the-box config works fine. The thing you're doing isn't actually that complicated.
Right.
So you don't need to like stack yourself on, you know, a mattress tower of config just so that you can like feel good about the robustness of your local dev environment. Like if you don't have to think about it, then don't think about it.
I agree with you, Michael. Like most web projects, you should not need to have the ability to run both Nginx and Apache. Because unless you're doing something really bizarre, like your website just shouldn't care which web server that it's running. But Jalen, why don't we get you in here to talk about this a little bit? Jalen, there we are. So are you used to use MAMP, is that correct, Jalen?
Oh, a while back, yes.
So you now have the zeal of the converted. you use Valet, correct?
Correct, yeah. It's kind of been a journey. I think back when I joined the Craft Slack initially, I found the DevOps channel and just enjoyed that immensely. So I jumped to Vagrant for a little bit and then over to Docker, and I kind of landed on Valet finally.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, I think what Nathan was saying, you know, in terms of just, you know, you want to set something up and just let it run, and you don't want to have to bother about starting stuff and stopping stuff and fixing that. And I kind of just found Valet to solve that for me. It automatically starts when my computer boots, and you know, all my sites are automatically serving from the folders.
How is it better for you than MAMP was, or how is it better for you than Homestead was?
MAMP was so long ago, I don't really remember it. I was probably on like version 2 or version 3. So I can't really compare it very well to MAMP. I just know, like you have said, that I've seen a lot of people in the Craft Slack complaining about it. And then in terms of Vagrant, I never actually used Homestead. I actually created my own Vagrant box.
Oh, dear God, you pulled an Earl.
Ha! sorry about that.
Go ahead, Jalen.
One of the things I did want to address is if any of our listeners have been following in the Craft Slack recently, there have been a lot of people like, my Valet is broken. And recently, Brew moved PHP. It used to be in an external tap, and they moved it to the core Homebrew repository and also renamed it. And that broke quite a few people's setups. So I've been trying to help people fix their Valet setups here and there. But see, I think that's probably...
This is making Earl say, see? You know?
That's the other thing, too, is I just want to clarify something. Homebrew is Mac exclusive, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so anybody that is running a Linux box is just not using Homebrew, you know?
Correct.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah,
and you're using whatever package manager that you like to use.
Right, yeah, okay.
You know, whatever.
And they do have an external fork like Valet for Windows, but I'm not a Windows user, so I'm not sure how reliable that is.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's probably the biggest downside of Valet, in my opinion. It's not like Vagrant or Docker, a containerized setup.
Right.
So I can't have if I had a coworker, I couldn't have them set up the exact same way easily. Mm-hmm. Just helping all these people like I have been in the Craft Slack, I've just realized how many people have different, you know, bash setup files and stuff, you know, paths
right.
that totally screw up what their Valet setup looks like compared to mine. So
yeah, so for anyone who's listening, so Valet is sort of a kind of a hybrid thing in that you're going to install all of the packages like PHP and other stuff that you want. You're going to install those directly on your Mac using Homebrew, right? And then Valet is kind of this thin layer that runs on top. And I think the reason why it's relatively popular is that you're using a standard system to install all of this stuff, which is Brew, right? Which is great until they change stuff, apparently, right, Jalen? Yeah. They just broke everything.
That doesn't happen every day.
Yes, it doesn't happen every day. But then also Valet is a very thin layer. And so it's kind of nice for local dev because you're not running any kind of a heavy containerized thing or a heavy VM like you would be with Homestead. And I think that's probably the reason it's kind of popular, right, Jalen?
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. It's just, it's pretty easy. I think it's easier to set up, in my opinion, than like Vagrant or Docker.
Right.
There's far, far less steps.
Right.
And if you're already a Homebrew user, it should be pretty familiar.
And that's what differentiates it from MAMP. I mean, first of all, there's no GUI. It's set up via the CLI, but it's pretty easy to get it set up. But that's what differentiates it from MAMP in that you don't get the custom binaries of whatever they happen to want to include with MAMP in it. You manage those yourselves via Brew by installing this stuff, right? Yes. And Jalen, correct me if I'm wrong, but Valet does allow you to switch between PHP versions, correct?
Not out of the box.
Is it Valet Plus that does it?
Yeah, I believe it's Valet Plus, which is another fork that somebody has sort of started building some newer features on.
Mm-hmm.
But out of the box, Valet does not provide that. But again, since it's built on Brew, all you have to do is install the newer version or an older version, whatever version you want of PHP via Brew, and then just unlink the current version and link the new version that you want to start using.
Yeah, that sounds less friendly than doing it via MAMP, though.
Right, correct.
So, it is less so Nathan...
But it's kind of the same thing, though. Like, okay. Valet and MAMP are actually very similar in that they aren't containerizing or really virtualizing anything.
Right.
They're just running binaries that are sitting somewhere on your system and providing a kind of a layer of DNS to make your local dev URLs work. And that's why, like, Valet is probably the fastest local dev environment, and MAMP is not far behind because you're not taking up a bunch of memory running a VM. You're just running binaries that are sitting on your system.
So we've got Nathan, who decided to come all the way over from Switzerland to join us because he wanted to get in his two cents regarding Nanobox. So you, as a designer developer that don't want to do DevOps, tell us why Nanobox is awesome.
So for me, I think Jalen helped me about 8 months ago when I first started using Craft. And I kept running into problems using Homebrew, basically. No Valet. I just kept having problems. And
So you were pulling in Earl, but you were doing it via Brew.
Well, I upgraded to High Sierra, and then I had some issues, and I was just frustrated with the whole thing. So, And I had a Django project to run, and Django uses virtual VNets. They've got their own wrapper for running a sort of semi-virtual environment. And I was just frustrated with everything, getting my custom Ubuntu box up with Vagrant and stuff. So I did some Googling, or some duck-duck-going. And I found Nanobox, and I tried it out, and I was blown away how quick and easy it was to get a project set up. It was a breeze. And for me, as somebody, I like GUI stuff. I'm a bit MAMP. I like that about MAMP, for instance. I like that I don't have to think about things. Nanobox doesn't have a GUI. But it does have a very, very simple CLI. You have a few commands to set everything up and to get a project up and running. It's a piece of cake.
So Nanobox, as we mentioned earlier, used to run on top of Vagrant, which is a full-on VM, but now is running on top of Docker.
Well, this is a bit of a red herring as well. Okay. So right now it uses VirtualBox.
Okay.
So when you download the Nanobox DMG,
mm-hmm.
And you install it, and it creates, it has a sort of, it's all hidden away, but it's a Vagrant setup that connects to your, to VirtualBox basically.
Hmm.
And then you configure you have a box file, which you configure your different containers, like, a data.db container, a web.craft container, you can call it what you like, and a storage container. And when you, that's, so that you've got Docker containers for the different things you might need. It can be a Redis, it can be anything, Elasticsearch, whatever containers you want, you can use.
So it's running Docker inside of the VM?
Yeah, but that's going to change. I say that now because I just had a preview last night from the new version from the guys from Nanobox,
mm-hmm.
and they've the new version is a little bit different. It's using Docker Compose for local dev,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Docker staller, no more VirtualBox.
Interesting. Now, some of the issues that... And it's unfortunate that Tim Kelty couldn't make it today because he was going to be discussing Docker. But some of the issues with running Docker as a development environment on the Mac is performance. The performance has not been good for quite some time. And my understanding is that they're working on it, but it's still just not there. Have you had any kind of performance issues with Nanobox?
I had once some weird thing, and I don't know if it was performance related or something to do with a corrupt my host's file or something. Mm-hmm. Because when you when you create, you can create a new DNS. Like you can say, add Nanobox, add DNS myproject.local.
Right.
And I had some weird thing once. I restarted my computer and it was gone, that problem. So I didn't even know what that problem was. But performance-wise, it's been great. I haven't had any on the type of projects I do, which are small to medium websites, I haven't had any problems at all.
So, and this is something that Earl might actually be able to speak to, because I know that he has worked on some Docker-based projects before. And my big thing with Docker is, like, I love the idea. And I've heard some very smart people promoting it for quite some time. So there must be something to it. And I really like the idea of containerizing things. But the real gain from where I see it is when you use Docker, the Docker container in your local dev, and then you use the exact same Docker container on your staging site, and then you use the exact same Docker container on your live production site, right? Mm-hmm. And I just haven't found where, and I think that's the real benefit in using it, because you have a containerized deterministic setup of just the things you need for this project, and you use the same thing in local dev, same thing in staging, same thing in production.
Right.
But the amount of effort that it takes to do that, I just haven't seen the payoff. Now, Earl, go ahead.
That's where Nanobox comes in. Because you don't have to think, I don't know anything about Docker. Literally, I had to read about, Hacker News, I saw tons of threads about Docker, and I was like, what is the thing?
Right.
It's the new fancy. And then I started using Nanobox, and I still didn't know what Docker was, but it worked.
Right.
I just didn't care about that, you know? Just everything worked as I expected it to.
Right. And you're kind of using a hybrid setup in that VirtualBox is still in the mix. And when you go to deploy to production, you're not running a Docker container on your server, right?
It is. It has. You run Nanobox deploy.
I see.
And it deploys from your local machine. It can be, you can have a GitHub hook and all this if you want, but mm-hmm. I don't do it like that. I'm a single one person shop. I just hit Nanobox deploy and it deploys my code base to the server. And I use Vulture right now.
Right.
I sometimes use DigitalOcean as well.
But it's not going to be running VirtualBox on the Vulture server.
No. It's a local Docker containers on the server.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In that case, I think you are seeing the benefit that I was talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And what I like about what they've done is they've taken away all the complexity of Docker.
Mm. Sounds neat. So Earl, what was your experience with Docker?
Yeah, Nanobox sounds light years better than my experience with Docker. I worked with Docker, it was a client setup. I was just doing a little bit of work.
Are you traumatized? Because I remember there was a lot of setup.
It was brutal, man. Yeah. It really was. And like they had really good documentation.
Right.
I think the main issue, to be fair, that we ran into was their documentation was based on that they're a Mac shop. So I'm trying to hack stuff together on a Linux machine, you know, missing. So like I didn't have homebrew, so you know, a lot of their stuff was homebrew. But yeah, the overhead for I wasn't even building an environment from scratch. I was just trying to use somebody else's Docker container. The setup was it took forever, and there was so much back and forth. It just felt like a lot of wasted time. But
now, Nathan, I got to admit that you have told me something about Nanobox that I wasn't aware of, and you've gotten me interested. I think I'm gonna have a look at it. But excellent. why don't we get Patrick in here?
It sounds like Nanobox is sort of for Docker what Homestead and Forge want to be for, like,
yes,
like, or what Homestead wants to be for Forge, right? It's like it's handling this congruency between dev and production by sort of provisioning, if you will, like the environment that Docker runs in, because Docker doesn't care where it runs, but we can all agree that Docker is really hard to set up wherever it runs. But once you're inside Docker, then you get this nice, you know, you can just move containers around and it all works. And so, like, that's really interesting to me. I'd never heard of Nanobox before, like, 2 minutes ago. And,
right.
I'm very, very interested in that.
So that's very succinct what you said. That's a very good description, I think, yeah.
So in fairness for equal time, so Patrick, why don't you get in here? And you said you're a reluctant valet user. So
I think I want to spend most of my time asking about Nanobox now. Yeah, so I mean, because now I'm interested. Yeah, so I use Valet. Gosh, going back, we had used MAMP. and kept on just running into issues where, yeah, where you would have, MAMP loves to put all these little hooks into your PHP.ini and your MySQL conf and all this stuff. And it was just a never ending battle of trying to make the GUI and the command line, configuration stuff work well. Never was completely happy with it. Moved over to Valet, I think for the same reasons that Jalen said. It's nice and clean. It runs quickly. It is like MAMP where there's a CLI, and I'm hearing just a little bit of echo, but there's a CLI just on top of good, solid technologies. Mm-hmm. It's really just allowing you to orchestrate these things like DNS mask and Nginx, PHP, et cetera. But yeah, it always, and I think you'll probably talk more about Homestead, but it is nice to have an isolation between your day-to-day machine and where you're using Slack and email and
right.
everything else, and the sacred place it is where you write your code. So I always am a little afraid of having all that live together. At the same time, though, and this has always been my reluctance towards something like Homestead or Nanobox. It always feels like there's a single point of failure. There's one Docker file or virtual machine or whatever that if I accidentally blow that one file away or that one package away, however we want to think of it, like everything is just self-contained. It's like Horton Hears a Who. There's this entire little thing just like sitting in that file, and if I accidentally destroy it once, everything's going to be gone, and it's not being backed up by the system-wide backup that I use on my computer. So right. That's always been my reluctance. I've played around with Homestead, but I think once I like destroyed instead of like turning it off, I think it destroyed the VM. And next thing I knew, yes. Everything was blown away.
No, but so here's the thing about that. And I'll get into it more, and Jonathan and I'm sure will as well, when we talk about Homestead. But you should be able to nuke your Homestead box with not a whole lot of repercussions. So
repercussions at all.
Yeah.
Not to the database?
So yeah. The database, but you have a system set up like I do where I'm pulling the database from somewhere else. So it's not a big deal. When I have nuked my Homestead box many times, and getting it back up and running is not a big deal. Some Git pulls, some database pulls, and away we go.
Yeah, right. the database was always my holdup for Homestead because...
Well, clearly you haven't. Safe. Clearly, you haven't been reading my articles on database syncing. But
you do have the best articles on database syncing.
Yeah.
Everyone knows.
So, Patrick, you would say that you consider Valet to be a step up for you from MAMP, but you still are kind of reluctant.
Yeah, it's just that feeling that everything's living in the same place. If mm-hmm. I'd say once, sometimes even twice a year, I like to do a complete nuke of my entire Mac and just reinstall things and just, right. Nuke and pave the whole thing. And it is a more involved process bringing Valet back because it is so deeply entwined to mm-hmm. to the whole Mac. So, the idea that I could have a Homestead instance that I can just spin right back up is pretty tempting. I'd love to hear more about Nanobox from Nathan, though. So are you using Nanobox not just for local development but also in production? Or
yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm just looking at their webpage a little bit. Go ahead.
I'll let Nathan speak to it, but he basically said that there's a way that you do the deploy, and it's just running Docker on the actual Vulture server in his case. So it's a whole round trip where the same containers that things run in your local dev are the exact same containers that they run in on the production environment. Right, Nathan?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, and so is there an intermediate build step? Like, how do if the project requires that it be built, like you have to run a build, is that part of the Nanobox deploy command that does that, or it does it remotely, or...?
You can do either. They have before and after hooks, which right. you can do that kind of thing. And I have, for instance, in my Nanobox files, boxfile.yaml, I run my gulp command on the server. I don't care.
Right.
I don't. Some people say, oh, you should run it before you run the Nanobox deploy command. I don't care. I just have that. So I have a few things that happen in the deploy process. But it deploys it, and nothing happens until the deploy is finished. When the deploy is finished, it's I don't know how it works exactly, but they you never
it's
have
magic.
Downtime. Yeah,
it's
you
magic.
Never have, yeah, right. It really is. You never have downtime. They have,
you're spinning up this new container in the in whatever environment, and then when the container is done building itself, it just, you know, flips the switch, and now everything points to the newly built container.
Right. Yeah.
So that sounds really neat. But Jonathan, let's give you a chance, and I'll chime in on it a little bit too, to talk about Homestead and what it is and why you use it.
Yeah, so I probably should be doing exactly what Patrick does, where he tears down his Mac twice a year and rebuilds it, because I'm super paranoid about like junk, you know, just building up on my machine. I never clean out my downloads folder. I've got stuff all over the place. So I like Homestead because I feel like it's sort of shielding me from a little bit of that. I mean, when you have a project and you're installing like tons and tons of dependencies, like if you use Yarn or NPM or whatever, it's downloading tons of dependencies and it has to install binaries sometimes. So I like the idea that all of this stuff is like segregated, I guess, on the VM. I'm not installing like Phantom JS on my local machine. I like that I can run the build in the VM instead of running it on my local machine with all of the packages that are required to do that. And I just kind of generally like the segregation that I get between this is my local machine that I work on and this is a completely separate environment that is apart from that. And I can sort of tinker with it and do whatever I want without fear of screwing up anything on my local environment.
And it's exactly like I essentially with Homestead, which is what I use most of the time, it's essentially like I have Earl's Linux server running inside of my machine. Yeah. Right. But it's insulated in that I can do whatever the hell I want to it.
Right.
And I will say that if you are using Homestead and you think it's a catastrophe when you're, if you have to nuke your Homestead box, then you're doing it wrong, because it should be as not big of a deal as it would be to spin up a new VPS if there's something wrong with any of your sites. Like, to get Homestead back up and running, like if I do it all the time where I nuke the box, because I do horrible things, right? I do horrible things inside my VM, and to get it back up and running should be really trivial. Like, it should involve doing a Git pull and doing a database pull, and then you're done. Right, and that really should all it should be. So, yeah. Patrick, you should have life without fear from the point of view that it should not be a big deal if your Homestead box goes down.
And if you're experimenting with stuff, like I know Andrew, you're doing a lot with like static caching these days. Doing that also. So this can be tricky sometimes to get this working. Maybe you have like an e-commerce site and you're experimenting with, okay, well, I have a static cache. How do I skip the cache properly when somebody has something in their cart or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah.
So it would be really hard to play around with this in like a Valet type environment.
Yeah.
Because if you screw something up, you screw something up. If you screw it up in Homestead, then you just nuke the entire box and start over.
Yeah, exactly. And I realize that I'm an exception here, because if you're just doing web development, then you're not really going to see the benefits of having your own VM the way that I do, because I'm doing all sorts of, you know, horrible server-side stuff that I really do need to be able to hack into a real Nginx server or a real, you know, whatever, and to do things like experiment with static caching and to get the Nginx config optimized and do all this kind of fun stuff that I want to be able to, that when I make a mistake, okay, no big deal. You know, I just nuke the box and I start over again, and I don't have to go through what some people go through with Valet, where I'm spending hours in brew, like reinstalling this or reinstalling that. And I've even seen it where people nuke their actual machine to the extent that they can't do any work, like anything, until they get it fixed, right?
Right, that's the case with Valet, because, yeah, if you screw something up, you're not going to be doing anything profitable until you've got it fixed.
Right, and the kind of tinkering that I'm doing, like, I need to have something that if I screw something up, all right, you know, I'll throw it away and I'll start over again, no big deal, and get it back up and running. And that is the primary reason why I continue to use Homestead, is for me, having an actual VM is really, really useful. And I realize
and
that,
I
that that isn't
necessarily nearly as much tinkering as you do.
Right.
I think for me, it's I do a little bit, yep. but I think for me, it's more just I like the philosophy behind Homestead right. more than having everything installed as binaries in my local environment.
Yeah, and maybe you know we didn't actually define kind of what it is. So Homestead is actually just a Vagrant box, right? So Vagrant is this provisioning software that runs inside of a VM, and you can use VirtualBox, which is free, and there are Parallels, there are all sorts of different ones. And Homestead is just a kind of provisioning, the same way that Forge is a provisioning for your actual server. And one kind of interesting thing that I've actually done before is you can actually use Forge to provision your Homestead VM if you want.
Yep.
Right? You can easily just spin up a Vagrant VM, and then you can just provision it with Forge as if it's a you know publicly available server anywhere. And I like that. I mean, I really like that I have a real server sitting here, and it's kind of like what Earl has, where he's got a staging server, but I can take it anywhere. I can be in the middle of the Swiss Alps, you know, with no internet whatsoever, and I can do all my work. I've got my VM right there. I can do absolutely everything.
Do you frequently work from the Swiss Alps?
I was going to say, which is like, what are you doing in the Swiss Alps?
Every other weekend, at least.
can I come
work for you? You're doing vacation wrong.
At least every other weekend I'm up there.
I thought you had sold your Swiss chalet.
No. I don't want to get into it. It's a lot. There are some shell corporations involved.
Yeah, it's a whole legal.
Yeah, another podcast.
Yeah, we'll get into that, you know, some other time. But, you know.
Andrew swaps out Swiss chalets like he swaps out VMs.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. But the other difference between, in addition to be able to use it without an internet connection, the other difference between what I'm doing and what Earl's doing is that I'm completely insulated. Like if I fat finger it and I nuke the database, doesn't matter, you know, because it's all on my local self-contained environment. If I'm editing the Nginx config and it's on the same server as live production and I screw something up, you know, the server's going down, right? So I like having that kind of layer of insulation. Now, the downsides to Homestead is that it is slower, right? I mean, you are actually running an actual VM inside of your computer, so it's not going to be as fast as something like Valet. I will say that on my current setup, I don't ever notice slowness as being an issue.
Right.
But it
I
is
was going to reach that point, too. It's like, it is technically slower, but how many people have perceived it to be so slow that it's noticeable to them? I mean, I don't know. That seems like a non-issue to me.
Well, and I like the fact that, you know, it comes with everything pre-installed and pre-set up for me. I don't have to go through Brew and try and install this package, install that package. Xdebug is on there. Node is on there. Yarn, everything is on there. It's on there, and I can connect.
Composer.
Yeah, everything. And I can connect to Xdebug via PHP Storm and step through code, trace things, output, you know. I mean, from a kind of real kind of nerdgasm style development, I mean, I just find it to be really, really useful. So there.
Can I jump in?
Do it, Nathan.
Can I jump in? Yeah. So Nanobox has a similar thing where they right now, and it's going to be like this in the future with the next release as well, you have your local environment, then you can run a command, Nanobox dry run. You're basically running a dry run server as if it was live on your local box to test everything. And it's awesome. For me, this is like nerdgasm stuff because I used to always have problems between getting my Django app or my PHP projects from the past running as if on the server. Like I would often deploy something and, oh, shit, you know?
Right.
What's happening? And it didn't work. And Nanobox, what you're saying reminds me very much of Nanobox, that you can run a as if server on your local machine.
But that's the reason that works, though, is because you have VirtualBox and Vagrant. If they get rid of that layer, how is that gonna still work?
Using Docker Compose. Docker Compose is a similar, as I understand it, a similar. Right, Rog maybe can.
Yeah. So it's. Again, Docker doesn't care where it runs. It doesn't care if it runs in Vagrant or on your kind of base computer kernel or on a DigitalOcean box or an Amazon box or a Vulture box, whatever, doesn't care. Everything above the layer of the Docker container, that's where your parity is from environment to environment. So like the hard part is getting Docker set up wherever.
Right.
But once you have the Docker layer, you can take that container and move it wherever, and it works in exactly the same way.
Right.
Which is the magic, which is sort of, again, a parallel concept to your Vagrant box inside of, you know, whatever, VirtualBox or Parallels or whoever, right? That Vagrant box, it can move to anywhere that you have this virtualization layer set up. You can put that Vagrant box on top of it, and everything above that layer works the same no matter where it is.
Right. Which is really, I mean, it sounds like a really, really cool thing. And, you know, I'll tell you what I currently recommend for most people is Valet. And then for people like me that really want a Homestead VM, you know, I recommend that. But I am very, very interested in checking out Nanobox now, Nathan, because it sounds pretty interesting. And if you, I mean, you're advertising yourself as primarily a designer developer who just wants to get stuff done. And if you're able to spin this up and get this stuff working for you, and I mean, it sounds pretty compelling.
Yeah. That's pretty much true. Yeah. And I don't, just to be clear, I don't work for them.
Yeah. How much of a kickback are you getting for this?
I think you undersell your technical ability just a little bit.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But no, I mean, it like Valet is really good if you just want really fast performance and you don't need parity between your dev and production environment.
Right.
Right. Like if you're doing like a little throwaway project, or you just want to test something out real quick, or you know, you don't really need to care about the differences in your configs between your dev server and your local. I mean, Valet, I think, doesn't even run Nginx, right? Valet runs some other.
Really, I think it does now. It used to run Sidecar.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it does now. Okay. So maybe there's a little bit
Caddy
more.
Caddy used to run. Yeah. Or Caddy. I'm sorry.
Caddy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so like if you're just doing a throwaway project or a test project, or you're experimenting with something and you just want like a server really fast with no effort, and you want it to like blaze on your machine, that's the value set for to dig down and configure something and be able to nuke it if you mess it up and start over easily. That's a great case for something like Homestead or Nanobox.
So I want to interrupt real quick. Did you guys hear the dog bark?
Your dog?
Yeah.
A while back, but not just now.
So what we've been doing, the dog has been coming over and making noise, and I gave her like a chew to make her go away and leave us alone while we're talking, and she quickly figured that out, and she's been coming back with increasing speed. I fed her like half a bag of these dog chews.
Yeah, she's gaming you.
She's getting pissed off.
If you feed a dog a chew, it's going to want...
Yeah, right. So I realized that, you know, different tools for different people, different projects, but how do we convince Earl to use something? Like, Earl, have we convinced you at all? Or does this talk just sound like it's more of a headache to pick one of these things than any benefit that you would get from it?
It sounds like a tremendous headache. Nathan keeps using the phrase, I don't want to think about it.
Right.
And man, I can get on board with that.
Right.
So Nanobox, I definitely want to check it out. And again, I recognize this stuff is, I just, the motivation for me as a, you know, one man shop isn't quite there. And again, like, especially I don't do nearly as much tinkering as you do. So
right.
The idea of destroying something, and when it happens, I'll text you at 3 a.m. and let you know, like, I did it.
My phone will be off.
I did it. No, it doesn't matter. I'll get through. But yeah, I mean, I know it's the right thing to do.
But here's the thing.
And you know, we keep saying pull it. We keep saying like, oh, you pulled an Earl, like building your own box is bad. Right. And I actually like, I think everybody ought to, once in their life, like set up their own PHP Nginx server.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like, it's, you know, spend a day and just toil through it, because you will come out of that experience, A, with a layer of DevOps knowledge that's really useful, and B, with so much greater appreciation and yes. ability to decision make about these tools.
I had to do that this week, Michael. I had to do this week.
I was just about to say, have you done that recently?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I had to do that this week. And you know what? Like, I set everything up manually. And my one thought was, like, I really don't want to do this. You know, that really was what I was thinking is, God damn, I wish I could just use Forge for this thing. I mean, honestly. Yeah. But I do agree that you're going to gain a lot of knowledge by doing it. And what you may learn may also be that I don't want to have to do this. You know?
Well, that you are guaranteed to learn that 100%.
Yeah.
Like, what you will also learn, yeah. like, not only will you be able to solve some of these more esoteric problems just because you have some domain knowledge now, yeah. but you can look at all of these different tools and compare their feature sets and really, like, compare and contrast what their values are versus, you know, what they require from you. And you can make that decision so much more wisely if you just have the knowledge and the pain right. of having done it yourself.
And I get where Earl is coming from, because I think we all have been through it at one point or another when we were first looking at picking up something new. Like, you know, when we first started using Grunt or when we first started using Gulp. And do I really want to learn this stuff? But then after you actually get up to speed doing it, you come to realize how much better of a experience it's going to end up being for you. And I really do think that that is the case here, Earl,
yeah.
where, yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass. And you may not realize how useful it is for you to have some kind of a decent local dev setup until after you've done it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, my number one concern is I just don't want to, I want to be able to refer to myself as a cowboy coder. and so I feel like if I set any of these things up, it would be disingenuous for me to say that.
You know, in all of the
honorary cowboy.
What you should do is just come down to Texas yeah. and come to rodeo with me.
Like, all right.
Because whenever I'm at the rodeo, but I'm coding,
yeah,
I'm wearing a cowboy hat and cowboy boots, and I can legitimately say I am a cowboy
that's
coder.
That's as legit as it gets. Yeah.
But I'm not actually doing anything that, you know, causes pain to me or my clients. Right. So it's yeah. best of both worlds, and I invite you to Texas anytime.
Awesome. So for anyone who's listening, he's actually not kidding. He really does go to a rodeo and wear a cowboy hat.
You know, I have no doubt.
My favorite picture of me in the whole wide world is I'm like leaned up against a bale of hay. Like with my laptop and my my boots and my hat, and I'm sitting against this bale of hay with my laptop writing code, and just like this perfectly encapsulates like my ideal self. And I encourage this lifestyle for all of you. Please just come visit me, and we can all be cowboy coders together.
Sweet.
I want to go to Andrew's chalet and be a Swiss coder.
Mm. Oh, also that's actually not a bad second place.
Yeah. So Nathan,
to,
I think it's
vision a new one though.
Nathan, I think it's really cool that you've been on here, because I think there are a few people here that maybe are going to check out Nanobox and see what this new hotness is like and see if it makes yeah. sense. I think that I am definitely going to check it out because sure. there will be some projects that will make sense. But I'm pretty sure that I'm going to keep using an actual VM for quite some time. Just because of some of the horrible things that I want to do. But I think it's really interesting to hear all of these different perspectives and different tools that we can all use with the same end goal in mind, which is to be able to code without fear and to only show the client the finished work. You know, they don't need to see how the sausage is made. They just need to see the nice end result of it, right?
Yep. That's the goal, right?
That is Absolutely. The goal. So unless anyone has anything to add, I mean, I think we're kind of winding stuff down, right?
Did anyone not
get to say something that you really wanted to say about your chosen development environment?
I have one small thing, but may I?
Yeah, go.
Yeah. Somebody else wanted to say something. I don't want to interrupt. But one thing that has come up on Slack, the Croft Slack, it came up a few times. People were worried about, this Nanobox is this new thing in town. What happens if the company gets bought out by, I don't know, let's say Microsoft?
Is that really so bad?
No, well, that's another another podcast, another I reckon. Podcast.
We're about to find out.
Yeah, exactly. But so because they're a company that they're using all this open source software, but they're a profitable company they're not a non-profit. They want to make money, and they're building this. So a lot of people have been saying, okay, this hobby package that's for free, is that going to go away? And what's the goal? And so on and so forth. So I actually asked them clearly about it, and they said the company's healthier than ever been. The sales are higher. They're devs at heart, and they're going to keep doing it. I said I'd say it because I kind of felt that it came up enough. I don't know if you remember, Jalen, we once had a conversation about it in a thread with some other people, and that was a big worry.
And Nanobox sounds like an interesting mix of a local dev environment combined with a provisioning and deployment service like Forge, right? I mean, it sounds like they're trying to encapsulate the end-to-end. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's how I actually landed on it, because I wanted to use Forge for a Python project. And I was like, hey, wait, Forge is only PHP, what the hell? And I tried to find something similar, and I couldn't find anything, and then I found Nanobox.
Python doesn't come installed with Forge?
It's Forge and Homestead in one.
Right. Well, and I think that's really...
the provisioner and the virtualizer.
Yeah, and I think that's really smart because it's trying to solve the problem end-to-end.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is... I think that's that could be very, very compelling in terms of the being able to do very sophisticated things without having to do a whole lot of work to make it happen.
You guys are going to be so jealous when I jump in a Nanobox. I'm like, look at all the sweet stuff I can do. And I got to skip all the Homestead.
You're going to come over and you're going to show me how it all works. So yeah, I don't have to learn
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
again.
Fair. Right on.
Well, very, very cool. So I think that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to our RSS feed or subscribe via iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, leave us a review. Always helps. And you can also follow us on Twitter at devmode.fm. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Just leave us a comment on the devmode.fm website. For the devmode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Earl Johnston.
I'm Jonathan Melville.
I'm Patrick Harrington.
I'm Michael Rogg.
I'm Jalen Davenport.
And I'm Nathan Carrido.
Fantastic. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, and I'm pretty sure that Michael's Wi-Fi has ruined yet another podcast.
I swear to God, like, I did the speed test. I had a T1 connection going into this episode, and then as soon as you hit record, I dropped.
I think I'm probably going to have to use the fallback recording, but we'll see, because I think it only recorded part of it. And this dog is driving me insane.